This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for May 2015. This is an interesting month. It's between what we might call the winter and early spring sky, when we have the constellations of Orion and Taurus and Gemini, and above them Auriga. They'll now be setting over in the west soon after sunset. Leo, over to the left of Castor and Pollux in Gemini, is still up. Over to the left of that, there's actually quite a bright star called Arcturus, the fourth brightest star in the sky, actually, which is the brightest star in Bootes. Between Leo and Arcturus is a fairly blank part of the sky. It's actually called, though, the realm of the galaxies, because with a reasonable-sized telescope, almost anywhere you look there, you'll find galaxies. Indeed, there are 18 of Charles Messier's objects. It's looking towards the centre of the Virgo cluster. Virgo is the constellation just below Coma Berenices. And it's, in fact, the heart of the Virgo supercluster, of which our own little local group of galaxies is an outrider. Rising over in the east, as the evening draws on, we have the summer triangle, made up of the stars Vega in Lyra, Deneb in Cygnus, and Altair in Aquila, the eagle. Between Arcturus and Vega is the constellation Hercules, and the four brightest stars make up what is called the Keystone. It's slightly wider, so not a square, but wider at the top than at the bottom. If you find that, and you move up about two-thirds of the way on the right-hand side, with binoculars you might well find a little fuzzy blob, certainly if it's a dark sky. And that's in fact a lovely globular cluster called M13, another of Messier's objects. High overhead is the Plough, part of the constellation Ursa Major, with its two stars Merek and Dubhe acting as the pointers towards Polaris. On the other side of Polaris, relatively low above the northern horizon, we have the W shape of Cassiopeia. So, if one cares to look for a while soon after sunset, and then wait a while perhaps and get up later in the night, there's quite a lot to see in the heavens. And in fact, our skies are blessed with three really nice planets this month. So let's have a look at them. Well, Jupiter, it's now somewhat past its best, but it still stands out in the south to southwest at nightfall. As it gets further away from us, its brightness falls slightly from magnitude minus 2.1 to minus 1.9, and of course the angular size will drop too, from 38 to 35 arc seconds, but that's still quite a lot. It's spending the month in Cancer in its eastwards progress towards Leo, with a small telescope. You should easily be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the Great Red Spot, and up to four of the Galilean moons. On the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, I have two little highlights to do with Jupiter. The first tells you when the Great Red Spot is on the meridian facing towards us, so it's easiest to see. The number of those possibilities is now reducing because the number of hours of darkness is getting less. But also, later in the month, on May the 20th, starting at about 10 p.m. in the evening, we have some very nice events across the face of Jupiter. First, there is the shadow of Ganymede passing across the face. And that is followed by transits of first Callisto and then Io. And I've given a diagram of that again on the Night Sky website. Saturn reaches opposition this month. And that's when it's approximately due south at midnight UT or 1 a.m. BST. So it'll be visible for most of the hours of darkness, and I'll say more about that in the highlights of the month. Mercury passed behind the Sun, that's called superior conjunction, on the 10th of April, and can still be seen in early May, about an hour after sunset, a few degrees west of the Pleiades cluster in Taurus. It will gradually rise higher in the sky until the 7th of May, when it reaches what is called greatest elongation east, 22 degrees away from the Sun. As May progresses, its brightness falls from minus 0.4 at the start of May, that's quite bright, down to plus 3 towards the middle of the month, when it disappears into the sun's glare. Again, the angular size is not great, increases in fact from 6.8 arc seconds at the beginning of May up to about 11 arc seconds before it's lost in the sun's glare. Mars, having graced our evening skies for many months, is now finally sinking into the sun's glare. You might just be able to glimpse it around the first of the month, about 9 degrees below the Pleiades cluster, shining at magnitude plus 1.4. But you'll need a very low western horizon to do that. I think it's going to be quite difficult. The angular size is just 3.8 arc seconds, so you're not going to see any details on its illuminated salmon pink surface. Venus is still shining brightly at magnitude roughly minus 4 all month, the brightest object in the sky apart from the moon. It's dominating the western sky after sunset. It starts the month in Taurus, but climbs up to Gemini, passing the star Epsilon Geminorum on the 16th. It will actually reach greatest elongation from the sun on the 6th of June. It brightens from minus 4.2 to minus 4.4 during the month. As it does so, though, its angular size increases from about 16 to 22 arc seconds, and the illuminated phase shrinks from 67 to 53%. So we've certainly got Jupiter and Venus in the early evening, and Saturn later on, as we shall see. Well, what about the highlights? Well, May is certainly our best month to view Saturn. It reaches opposition on the 23rd of May, so it'll be visible for most of the hours of darkness. The beautiful ring system has now opened out to about 24 degrees, virtually as open as they ever become. It brightens to magnitude 0 during the month, and that's the brightest it's been for about 8 years, largely due to the fact that the ring system is now quite open. Its globe spans 18.5 arc seconds across, whilst the ring system spans 42 arc seconds. Around opposition, that's a few days around the 23rd of May, there's an interesting phenomenon. It's called the Seeliger effect. When we're looking directly away from the sun towards Saturn, the shadows projected by the myriads of particles of ice in the ring system fall directly behind them, so do not fall on other particles, so reducing their apparent brightness. Thus, for a few days around opposition, the ring system appears somewhat brighter than normal. That'd be nice to look out for. Saturn is moving in retrograde motion, that is westwards, away from the double star Beta Scorpii, back towards Libra, which it reaches on the 12th. If only Saturn were higher in the ecliptic, its elevation never gets much above 18 degrees from our northern climes, and so the atmosphere will hinder our view of this most beautiful planet. In late April, I was in the Sahara Desert at a latitude of plus 29, so Saturn was about 23 degrees higher in the sky, and on a night of superb seeing, looked absolutely wonderful. On May the 2nd, you might, as I mentioned earlier, be able to spot Mercury in the Pleiades cluster. Given the low horizon in the west-northwest and clear skies, you might find it halfway between the Pleiades cluster on the right and the Hyades cluster on the left, with the star Aldebaran lying between the Hyades cluster and us. And you may possibly spot Betelgeuse, the top left-hand star of Orion, to the left of the Hyades cluster before they set. There is a meteor shower this month, on May the 6th, before dawn. It's called the Eta Aquarid meteor shower. It's actually one of the finest showers you see in the southern hemisphere. But for us, the radiant in Aquarius is very low above the horizon. But it may well be that you can glimpse some of the meteors in the pre-dawn sky looking towards the southeast about 90 minutes before dawn. There'll be a waning gibbous moon, but over to the west, that will hinder our view somewhat, so perhaps only the brightest of the meteors will be seen. On May the 21st and 22nd, about an hour after sunset, you can see Venus with a crescent moon. Venus will be seen lying below the stars Pollux on the left and Castor on the right in Gemini. On the 21st, the crescent moon will lie to the lower left of Venus, whilst on the 22nd, it will actually be almost at the same elevation over to its left. On the 23rd and 24th of May, just 2 days later, one can see the moon below Jupiter. Given a clear sky and again a low western horizon, about 10 o'clock, you should be able to see both Jupiter and the crescent moon below. They both lie below the mane of Leo, the lion. On the 23rd, the moon, having moved higher up and to the left in the sky, will lie over to Jupiter's left. I mentioned that it was the opposition of Saturn around the 23rd of May. And you can see it at around 11 p.m. looking in the southeast, and then higher in the sky later in the evening, above the fan of three stars that form the head of the Scorpion. Sadly, again, because it's relatively low elevation, it won't be too good, but let's hope for a nice clear sky with good seeing to observe it with. And finally, Comet Lovejoy has been in our skies for many months. It's still visible as a faint fuzzy ball. I observed it, in fact, from the Sahara Desert just a few days ago. But on the 28th, it passes within a degree of Polaris, so it's actually been quite easy to find. Perhaps with 15 by 20 or 10 by 50 binoculars if it's a really dark night, or preferably perhaps a small telescope. Simply find Polaris, have a reasonably wide field of view, and on the chart on the night sky page, I show you where it will be relative to the star. Perhaps a last chance to pick out Comet Lovejoy easily. Well, there's quite a lot to look for, I think, this month. There's rather less darkness now, but there are still quite a number of things we can enjoy looking at. I wish you well.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Southern Hemisphere, here's Claire Brotherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the May Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. It's a good month for exploring our own solar system this month, with three bright planets visible in our early evening skies. Stunning Venus, the brightest object in the sky after the Sun and Moon, will be the first to appear, sitting low in the northwest as the sun sets and the sky begins to darken. Venus can reach an apparent magnitude of -4.6, bright enough to cast shadows here on Earth. There are a number of reasons why Venus appears so bright. It is closer to the Sun than we are, and also one of Earth's nearest neighbours. But more importantly, it is covered in a thick, dense carbon dioxide atmosphere with clouds made of sulfuric acid. These clouds reflect almost 70% of the Sun's visible light that falls on them, making Venus so bright you can only really mistake it for the headlights of an aeroplane. The thick atmosphere of Venus also has another effect. It traps the Sun's heat that does reach the surface and prevents it from escaping back into space. This creates a runaway greenhouse effect, making Venus the hottest planet in the solar system, with an average surface temperature of 462 degrees C, despite being further away from the Sun than Mercury. In the north is Jupiter, appearing soon after Venus, just to the left of the upside-down question mark that forms the head of Leo the Lion. At the beginning of the month, Jupiter sets around midnight, but by the end of May it will be dropping below the horizon around 10 p.m. Jupiter is always worth a look through a small telescope or good binoculars, revealing up to four of its large Galilean moons. The moon passes close to Jupiter on the 24th of the month. Saturn is rising in the east, officially in the constellation of Libra, but lying very close to the line of three stars marking the pincers of Scorpius, with a bright orange star Antares a little further to the right. Saturn reaches opposition on the 23rd of May, when it will be at its closest and brightest in the sky, and high in the north at midnight. Saturn is just 1,340 million kilometres away this month, and is particularly good for observing, with its rings almost at maximum tilt. On the 6th of May, the waning gibbous moon passes within 2 degrees of Saturn. This also coincides with the peak of the Eta Aquarids meteor shower, caused when the Earth passes through the trail of debris left behind by the famous comet Halley. The shower appears to radiate from a point near the fourth magnitude star Eta Aquarii, one of the brightest in the zodiac constellation of Aquarius, representing the water bearer. The radiant won't rise until around 2 a.m. here in New Zealand, so the best time to go meteor spotting is in the few hours before sunrise. At the shower's peak, you may be able to spot up to a meteor a minute, many of them fast and bright and leaving glowing trails behind them. However, with the moon still close to full and not setting until after sunrise, viewing conditions will not be ideal this year. A second minor meteor shower peaks on the 13th of the month. The Alpha Scorpiids radiate from the area around Antares close to Saturn, which is well placed for viewing throughout the night. And with a thin crescent moon, viewing conditions will be much better than earlier in the month. Sadly, this is a very minor shower, peaking at just 5 meteors an hour from a dark location, so it's unlikely to put on much of a show. A little below and to the left of Saturn, in the constellation of Serpens, is the globular cluster M5, or NGC 5904. At magnitude 5.7, this will be tough to spot with the naked eye in anything but the darkest conditions, but with binoculars it's easy to find, although you will need a small telescope to begin to resolve it and start to pick out a slightly elongated shape and a few edge stars. With a calculated age of around 13 billion years, M5 is one of the oldest globular clusters known, and at 165 light-years in diameter and containing hundreds of thousands of stars, it is also one of the largest. It also contains 105 known variable stars, with the brightest and most easily observed variable 42 changing from magnitude 10.6 to 12.1 in just under 26.5 days. M5 is around two-thirds of the way from Antares to Arcturus, the brightest star in the constellation of Boötes, which rises in the northeast after dark. Although similar in mass to the Sun, Arcturus has used up all of the hydrogen in its core and expanded to become an orange giant. It currently has a radius around 25 times and a luminosity around 170 times that of the Sun, and is one of the most luminous stars in our solar neighbourhood. At just 37 light-years away, Arcturus is the brightest red star and the fourth brightest star in the nighttime sky, at magnitude minus 0.04. Above Arcturus is the bluish-white giant Spica, the brightest star in the constellation of Virgo, and the 15th brightest in the nighttime sky, at magnitude 1.04. Spica is in fact a binary star with a period of just 4 days, one of the nearest massive binary systems to our Sun. Its name comes from the Latin for ear of grain, and in both Greek and Roman mythology, the star and constellation are associated with the goddess of the harvest. On the opposite side of the sky, we have a chance to spot a comet this month. Comet C-2015 G2 Master is expected to reach peak brightness on the 14th of May, when it is just 70 million kilometres, that's less than 0.5 AU, from the Earth. It is expected to reach a magnitude of 5.4, easily in reach of binoculars and possibly visible to the naked eye from a dark location, although its low surface brightness will make it harder to spot. At its closest, the comet will pass within 0.8 AU of the Sun, reaching perihelion on the 24th. At the beginning of the month, the comet passes through Sculptor before moving into Fornax from the 9th to the 14th. It continues its journey through Eridanus, Lepus and Canis Major, and onto Monoceros by the end of the month. On May the 14th, the comet will be visible above the southwestern horizon after dusk, setting just after 9 p.m. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.